It's time to talk America's team with Patrick Walker from CBSSports.com, presented by Miller Lite.
And back here on ESPN Central Texas, we're now joined on the phone lines by Patrick Walker of CBS Sports. And Patrick, we do appreciate the time as always. See any players you might like to see with a star on their helmets next year in that little national championship game last night?
I think the one that stands out is going to be Grant Delpit. I think that if you look at his body of work, and there are some detractors of Delpit that you know, point out some of his weaknesses, and they feel like they may be liabilities at the NFL level. I disagree. I think that he's going to have the traditional rookie learning curve once he gets to the league, but I think it's a position of need for the Cowboys. And like I told you guys last week, it'll be interesting to see if McCarthy and Nolan can kind of flip the Cowboys front office as far as their mindset at that position and the value thereof. So if they can, then I think you could possibly see them looking at putting Delpit high on their board for the 2020 draft.
That, I mean, obviously he'd be a first-round draft pick. He'd be the guy at number 17. If they didn't go with the safety there, if they didn't go with Delpit, what would you be looking at? What do you think the next area of concern is for the Cowboys?
I got to look at that big body interior defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. You got DeMarcus Lawrence locked in, and the jury is out on if they're going to be able to afford Robert Quinn. But for now, as we're having this conversation, I'm kind of confident they have an inside track to get Robert Quinn. But the biggest concern outside of safety on that defense is going to be your three tech and your one tech. You got Antoine Woods. He's coming off of a contract year. We don't just yet know if he's going to be back. And even if he is back, what are you doing at three tech? You went and got Tristan Hill, but Tristan Hill was mostly inactive throughout his rookie season. He still has a learning curve to go through. Maybe he takes a step up in year two, but is that step up going to be as substantial as you would like it to see to be able to wave off that improving that position in the draft? I think the answer there is no. The return of Tyrone Crawford is going to help in a massive way, but Crawford is not 22 years old. He's a bit of an older veteran. He's approaching that 30-year mark, so they're going to have to address the defensive interior line, if nothing else, in the 2020 draft.
You mentioned Quinn, Patrick, and so much of the Cowboys offseason free agency-wise will be handling their own guys who have contracts that are now expiring or issues they got to solve. But I know they haven't been big spenders in free agency lately. They've tried to make smart, calculated moves. Are there any names that you've thought of so far that might be good fits for them as far as offseason acquisitions go, personnel-wise?
Well, as far as offseason acquisitions go, I'm going to say this name because it fits and it makes you guys feel good. It's Jamal Adams for me. And granted, Jamal Adams is not a free agent, still has 1 year left on his contract with the Jets, but the Cowboys are going to have to revisit attempting to trade for him, and then they'll see if the Jets are going to try to fleece them again. But that goes to, if they can't get someone like Adams, now you're looking at someone like potentially Delpit. But there's so many big-ticket items to take care of within the organization. You talk about Dak Prescott's contract coming up. You talk about Amari Cooper. You talk about Byron Jones. You got to get those three guys locked up before you start entertaining what you're doing in free agency. Now, the Cowboys, as we know, perennially, they are not big players in the first wave of free agency. I don't see that changing, although McCarthy is coming in. I think he understands that he already has a substantial amount of talent on both sides of the ball, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. So goal number one is you got to lock up your big three. Then you start working on those satellite guys like the Antoine Woods we're talking about, and kind of go from there. And then as the second wave and the third wave rolls around, that's when the Cowboys will kind of see what's still out there and start plugging holes from there.
What do you think Byron Jones' chances of getting the short end of the stick are as far as the free agency goes, and maybe the Cowboys don't bring him back on a big-time deal?
And the thing is, he doesn't have to get the short end of the stick. It's a situation where Byron Jones wants to remain in Dallas. The Cowboys want Byron Jones to remain in Dallas. Both sides know the money is there. Byron Jones and his agent should have a healthy understanding of where the Cowboys have some leverage, i.e. lack of takeaways. However, Byron Jones also has leverage in the fact that, like I mentioned before, he's the best cornerback they've had since Terrence Newman and arguably the best athlete they've ever had on the team outside of someone like Deion Sanders. So Byron Jones has leverage. The Cowboys have leverage. I think if you put a deal in front of him that's, $12.5, $13 million a year on average, I think that gets it done. If not, then you look at, did we lock up Dak Prescott without a tag? did we lock up Amari Cooper? Do we still have one of those tags available? Then you tag Byron Jones, and then you figure it out before mid-July. But I think there's a great chance that Byron Jones remains with the team in 2020. I'd be surprised if he does not. Not nearly as floored as I would be if Cooper or Prescott were not in uniform for the Cowboys. But I still think that Byron Jones remains right where he is.
Patrick Walker of CBS Sports joining us here on ESPN Central Texas. Patrick, it's been a few days now, but Mike McCarthy stepped away for a year, kind of changed his life in many various ways, including his approach to football. What was maybe one or two things that you heard during his press conference, whether it's the way they're going to attack, off the field or on the field, analytics? Like, what were a couple of things that stood out to you from Mike McCarthy's hiring and introductory press conference?
One of the main things that stood out is the fact that, as I had been reporting for a while, McCarthy has carte blanche to pick his coaching staff. And obviously the Cowboys, they were going to have less than a handful of favorites. Talk about someone like Kellen Moore, for example. But they weren't going to push anyone on McCarthy. He came in and he had his guys lined up. He had someone like Mike Nolan ready to go. Bones, the special teams coordinator, Tom Sula, Philbin, he's bringing in to replace Colombo. And I don't necessarily agree with letting Colombo walk. However, I do know Philbin's history and the relationship he has with McCarthy, so I don't see why that would not potentially be an upgrade. Philbin has more experience in the league at coaching the offensive line than does Colombo. So we'll see how that works out. But overall, the fact that he has free reign to build his staff, it lets you know that the Cowboys, Jerry Jones specifically, because we all know how the narrative goes, Jones is supposedly in his coach's way all the time. It was a breath of fresh air to see a coach come out and definitively say, I got this. This is my coaching staff. This is what I'm building. And, you know, we'll kind of go from there. So that was the biggest takeaway that I had. But then the analytics part of it shows me that he's willing to adapt. He took a lot of data in his year off so that he could evolve as a head coach. And I think that people need to understand that when McCarthy starts talking about analytics, he's not necessarily talking about, you know, passing 60 times a game. And I think that's where people misconstrue what analytics actually is and what it's supposed to be. It's a tool to help you succeed in the league. So for all of the, you know, gruff we gave Jason Garrett, rightfully so, for shunning analytics altogether, don't expect Mike McCarthy to, you know, pass 60, 70 times a game. That's not what's going to happen. He's still going to run the ball. He's going to establish the run. But for those that are actually listening to what he's saying, he didn't say he would establish to run the run so that the play action could be successful, because data proves that that's not necessarily the truth. The two don't necessarily correlate. What he did say was he wanted to establish the run with Ezekiel Elliott to do two things. One, to keep the play action effective and efficient, which analytics does prove, but he also wants to make sure that he's not putting too much on Dak Prescott, asking him to throw 50 times a game. Now, Prescott has shown that he can win games with his arm, but he's also shown that if you ask him to do that too often, then it becomes a bit of a detriment. So I think that as long as McCarthy embraces analytics but doesn't go too far over the rails, you look at a team like the Tennessee Titans, they just beat the Baltimore Ravens, one of the more analytics-driven teams in the NFL. Who did they beat before that? The New England Patriots, one of the more analytics-driven teams in the league. Yes, you could point to a team like the Kansas City Chiefs and say, hey, they throw the ball 70 times and they win. Granted, that's also their skill set. That's their personality. That's their roster build. That's not necessarily what you have. You don't have Patrick Mahomes in Dallas. That's not a knock against Dak. That's just the reality. So I like what I'm hearing from McCarthy. We'll see if he puts it all into play and how it balances out. But as it stands, I'm all in on what he has going on.
What have you seen and heard about how different this defense is going to look under Mike Nolan, Patrick?
Behind the scenes, they're still working to figure out how they want to orchestrate it. If I have to offer a hard prediction right now, I don't think they're going to switch to a 3-4. And McCarthy said something that was interesting, not necessarily in his press conference, but in his first radio interview with 105.3 FM The Fan, he mentioned that scheme is irrelevant to him. He was speaking defensively as far as bringing in Nolan, if they're going to switch from 4-3 to 3-4. And he's right. It's completely irrelevant. What he's looking to do is build around the players that he has, around the personnel that he has on defense. And if you look at the Cowboys, they don't necessarily run their 4-3 base all that often anyway. So that goes to McCarthy's point as far as scheme being irrelevant. I think if you look at the personnel, DeMarcus Lawrence, and you, of course you got to shore up that defensive tackle position, 3-tech, 1-tech, see what happens at 5-tech on the opposite side of DeMarcus Lawrence. You have two linebackers. I think LVE is going to be fine. I know people have concerns, but I've, again, spoken with no one who has that concern that he's going to have any issues in 2020. I think he bounces back, which helps Jalen Smith bounce back. You keep Byron Jones. You know, Jordan Lewis, keep him as a starter. Draft a cornerback, hopefully fix that safety position. They have the personnel for a 4-3. That's what this personnel has been designed around. I don't think McCarthy's looking to come in and shake things up or shake the ground beneath the defense. This is a hire that Jerry Jones brought in because he wants success now. If you go and you switch the scheme from 4-3 to 3-4, guess what you have to do then? You have to then bring in guys who are designed for the 3-4. And that takes a couple of years or so to solidify before you start seeing success. So I don't think that he's going to come in and do a complete shakeup. I think he's going to more so keep it at 4-3, but it might not necessarily be 4-3. It might be 4-2-1. It might be, you know, some variation of that, but we'll see how it goes.
Tomorrow we'll find out all the members of the Hall of Fame for the Centennial class, but we do know Jimmy Johnson as a coach is going to get in. Darren Woodson, he's up. What are your thoughts on Woodson, and what did you think when you heard Jimmy Johnson was going in?
Oh, this is so duplicitous for me, fellas. As I watched them surprise Jimmy with the announcement and kind of taking a step back when they announced, when they gave it to Cower and they surprised Cower on the CBS broadcast, first thing popped in my head was congratulations to Cower. He deserves it. Second thing popped in my head was, where's Jimmy? So when they doubled back on the Fox broadcast and surprised Jimmy, I was absolutely just elated. I almost had the same tears in my eyes that he did, that Troy Aikman did, that I'm sure Michael Irvin did, that basically all of Cowboys Nation had, feeling that, you know, because Jimmy Johnson is a generational coach. So for those that were born in, you know, 1980, such as myself, or later, you can appreciate the greatness of Tom Landry as a historian of the Cowboys and what he did for the organization. But those late 80s were lean years under the Landry era. Our Super Bowls came and our success came from Jimmy Johnson if you were born in that particular era. So Jimmy is my coach. And for those that are my age or, you know, plus or minus 5 years, that's your coach. So you feel elated, but at the same time, you also can't figure out for the life of you why Troy Aikman is in. Well, you get that, right? You understand why Michael Irvin is in, Emmitt Smith is in, and a list of other Cowboys from that era. Where's Darren Woodson? Where's Darren Woodson? His name continually comes up every year as a candidate, but he can't seem to get the election. He can't seem to get the votes to get elected to the Hall of Fame. I think it's egregious. I think it's comical in the worst way possible. Not ha-ha, but like, what are you doing? And I think that Darren Woodson is a generational talent, was a generational talent. He redefined the position. He moved from linebacker to safety and still dominated. You got to get Darren Woodson in the Hall of Fame sooner than later. It's flat out disconcerting to see that he's not in. But I don't want to harp too much on that because I don't want to take away from the beauty of Jimmy finally getting in, because he was being snubbed as well alongside Darren. So now that Jimmy is in, hopefully it kind of pushes the door a little bit further open for Darren to get in, because as far as safeties go, that's my goal.
You can find him at Voice of the Star on Twitter, also over on CBSSports.com as well. Patrick Walker here with us Tuesdays at 12:30. Patrick, is always a pleasure, man. We appreciate it and hope you have a great week.
Fun times, guys. Talk to you soon.